Welcome back, everyone. We're kicking off season two with an exciting guest, Dr. Lale Bajet, who is the new Prairie Chair for NSERC's Women in Engineering and Science. Welcome to Exclusion, a podcast that explores all things equity, diversity, and inclusion in the workplace. Exclusion is brought to you by Canadian Equality Consulting, MBR Consulting. Hello, everyone. Welcome to season two. We are kicking off on a special week here in Alberta, WinSTEM Week, or Women in STEM, Science, Technology, Engineering, and Math Week. Alberta's WinSTEM Week is part of a larger international celebration called Ada Lovelace Day. To help celebrate, we have a special guest. So thank you for joining us today, Dr. Lale Bajet.
Thank you for having me.
And as always, in the spirit of respect, reciprocity, and truth, we acknowledge that this podcast is being recorded on the traditional territories and oral practices of the Treaty 7 region in Southern Alberta and Region 3 Métis Nation. We acknowledge all nations, Indigenous and non, who live, work, and play on these lands, and to all who assist in their stewardship for generations to come.
Okay, so before jumping in, a bit of background about our guest. So Dr. Lale Bajet is a professor at the University of Calgary in Alberta, Canada. Her research focuses mainly on applying mathematical techniques to make computers faster and more efficient. She has won several international, national, and institutional rewards for her work on computer engineering and engineering education. In addition, Dr. Bajet has a passion for increasing the status of women in STEM and has worked on recruiting more women into engineering for over a decade. She has won many awards for her work on this topic, including as the recipient of the 2018 Alberta Women Science Network Minerva Mentor Award, the 2015 Association of Professional Engineering and Geoscience of Alberta, or APEGA, Women in Engineering Champion Award, and Association of Computing Machinery Special Interest Group in Design Automation Service Award in 2014. Earlier this year, she became the NSERC, so National Science and Engineering Research Council, Women in Science and Engineering Prairie Chair. As part of our discussion today, Dr. Bajet will be discussing some of her plans as the new Prairie Chair.
Wonderful. Well, welcome, Dr. Bajet. We're very glad to have you here for WinSTEM Week, but also October is Women's History Month. So it's great to include that in our conversation. So just to jump us off, I'd love to find out what attracted you to engineering.
First of all, thank you, Marcy and Alicia, for inviting me and giving me this opportunity to talk. And thank you very much for this great introduction. I am an immigrant to Canada, and I grew up in Iran. And where I was growing up, I knew that I wanted to be financially independent. And there were only two options available for me to be financially independent and have a career. And there were to become a doctor or to become an engineer. And I looked at some medical books, and they were full of gory pictures, and I knew I didn't like to see blood. So I made the choice to become an engineer. I was also very good at math and science, so that helped. But looking back at that decision, even though it was a little bit a forced decision to some extent, I am very happy to have made that decision.
Mm, that's amazing. So you studied engineering in Iran?
I started my bachelor's degree and finished it in Tehran University. And then I immigrated to Canada and did my master's and my PhD in University of Waterloo.
Oh, excellent. And I'd love to also just ask you, growing up in Iran and doing your engineering degree in Tehran, what was it like for you doing that at that time? And you were really driven. You wanted financial independence. And what was it like? Like, were you, you know, a minority in the class? Or were there some things that encouraged you along the way that helped?
Well, Definitely, if there was nothing encouraging, I wouldn't have been here. You always owe it to all the people who helped you or just championed you along the way to the success. So nobody becomes successful on their own. In some ways, it was very similar to what is here. And in some ways, it is an authoritarian country. So, and women are, and women being in the workforce, women being local, is a problem. So I remember one year I got a notice to go and explain my bad behavior as a, like a cautionary note. So I had no clue what I had done. And so we had these rooms in the library, like not a room, but a big area in the library that you could go and study, but it was only reserved for men. And we only had 10% female in our class. So they had given us a very small partition. They put a partition around the room so that we could, the females could go there and study in sort of a more private thing, area. So anyway, so I went and asked, so what is my bad behavior? What have I done? Like this was very harsh letter and was going to go on my transcripts, not transcript, but my files. And they said that there were some guys from the other side of the partition who heard you laughing inside this room assigned for women. And I had so many questions. Of course, I didn't ask any one of them. Why? Why was he sitting right beside the room? Or why was he, how could he know it was me laughing, not somebody else? Or like, you know, what is wrong with laughing? If I cry, would it be okay? And so anyways, I didn't ask them and I just said, I'm so sorry, I will never laugh again. So and I stopped using that room at all because it didn't feel like a safe place. Mm-hmm. But so sometimes these experiences are very different, but other experiences in terms of the professors wanting the best for you, helping you in getting successful. I know when I was wanted to come to University of Waterloo and I was asking for reference letters, there were so many of the professors who were willing to do that. And, you know, you should consider this and that and this scholarship. So, I mean, in general, you look at it and then there's systems of oppression are there and built in, but then the people there are really nice. And if you don't get those supports, you will never be able to rise.
Right. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. We'd love to know what has ignited your passion. So throughout your career as an engineer.
So engineering is the best profession in the world. Sorry, the scientists. Engineers are the people who make things. And I really like the creativity that it involves. We're also really good at problem solving. And so the problem solving is also something that keeps me engaged, keeps me happy, and keeps me wanting to do more. And then part of my profession is to actually teach other people. And every day I get so much energy from going to university and the University of Calgary and seeing all the talented students there, the next generation, building so many wonderful things and thinking about the issues and problems that when I was their age was just not even in my radar. And so every day going there and seeing them makes me be very happy about the future we're going to have.
So study after study identifies how we are starting to get better at recruiting girls into the STEM fields. But as the careers progress within academia and others, we lose women along the way. What are your thoughts on both the recruitment and retention of girls and women in STEM and engineering in particular?
So let's first start by acknowledging that why we need women and girls in STEM. And engineers are the makers. So everything around us, from the communication systems we have to the buildings we live in, are made by engineers. And scientists are also studied by the scientists. So basically, if we want to build a world that is made for everybody, we need to have more females and representation of the different types of people in the profession. What can make it easier for girls to access engineering and also for women to stay engineering, in my opinion, is to basically look at the systemic problems that exist and systemic barriers that exist, and seeing how we can take those systemic barriers out. So, for example, imagine there is a big wound and you want to fix it. And you either keep putting Band-Aid on, this is the things we are doing with retention, or you keep giving the person Tylenol. It's not going to solve the actual problem. So what we need to do is we need to come say, where did this problem is coming from? And a lot of it can go back to the culture in the society, the culture in the engineering profession, and the value we put on the work women do in the profession, also the system and the hierarchy that exists. So we need to address these issues to be able to recruit and retain more women. I think once we have done that, we will be able to be a lot better at our efforts.
Well, and I know the U of C is doing a few things to try to help, not just to attract more girls to engineering, but also to retain them. Can you maybe say a few things that are happening just even our own city here to try to get more girls into the profession?
Absolutely. I'll be very happy to talk about those. So, for example, one of the problems we have had with recruiting more females to engineering is a lot of girls don't think that physics is hard, or they don't like physics, and they don't take physics, which is the requirement to come into engineering. So we have been putting a lot of, previously, we had put a lot of focus on putting in different activities and different sessions to sort of show how physics is not hard or how females should come to engineering. But then we decided to actually have a little bit of a deeper look and see where the problem is coming from. So what we found is that in Alberta, and I don't know about other provinces, but it could be in other provinces too, a lot of the students take physics before they have an adequate math background. They took the physics before they know the language of how to actually talk physics, because math is the language for science. And so what happens is that they take the physics course and they see that this is really hard, which it would be. And this happened to my own daughter, who took the physics and she was trying to calculate something. And I just said, well, take the derivative and set it equal to zero. And she didn't know what derivative is. So a problem that could have been solved very easily using the mathematical technique took her hours to understand and solve. So what we did is that, what we can do is we can't, what happens in this regard with the physics is that when girls take it and they find it hard, the society, the parents, the teachers, or just the culture around them, a lot of the time says, this is because you are a girl or you're female that you can't understand physics. This is shown, for example, even sitcom like Big Bang, all the men are physicists and all the girls are biologists or waitresses. So the girl says, I should be better in biology. If I like science, I'll go to biology. But for males, this is the reinforcement. It's the opposite way. They say, well, it might be hard, but you know, all of these other people got it, so you can get it too. So it is comes with the double sort of the culture and the order, something very simple. So what we did at Schulich School of Engineering is we started a new pathway for students who we know are good in science. So these are the students who have taken biology, chemistry, and math and have got really high marks, but didn't take the physics for whatever reason that there was. So they can apply to engineering and get accepted if they make the cut to come to the Schulich School of Engineering. But in the summer time, they will take a course. We call it the Bioengineering Summer Institute. During the Summer Institute, they learn all the physics they need to know, but in terms of bioengineering principles. So, for example, we use the heart and a model of heart and how it pumps to teach about workflow and pressure. And so by calculating, by understanding this, they can make a model heart and do that. To learn, to teach them about speed and angular velocity and so on, we ask them to make a luge circuit. And we actually had one of the Olympians in luge who had won medals, Alex Goh, who came to the class. She was one of our civil engineering students at the time. She came to class and gave a talk. And so using all of these different bioengineering principles, we can actually teach all the materials the students need, not only just the physics, but all the other materials that relate to engineering, and put them on a right path to become great engineers.
See, that's super interesting, because I remember taking those physics classes and so many of the examples were like war-based, or like how can you get a missile somewhere, or like it was crazy how the subject matter would have been a lot more interesting to learn it through luge and the heart pumping versus destruction. How can you just destroy the earth with physics?
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's fantastic. That's really encouraging to hear. Building on that, from your experiences, what advice can you give each of us to help foster and encourage equity, diversity, and inclusion in educational settings, or even broader, anything that would translate over to workplaces?
We have to ask good questions. We can't actually be able to address any issues and foster equity, diversity, and inclusion. And I would add justice to that too, without asking the good questions and trying to find the root problems. But the other advice, which might be a little bit easier, is to support each other and promote each other. I used to think about, like when I started working, I used to think there is like these five buckets of opportunities in my workplace with all the other people I started. And the first buckets of opportunities are the best ones, and it goes like less, but like worst one and worst one. And the last bucket was like whatever leftovers nobody wanted. And the first bucket, usually like the stuff in it, would usually go to the tallest guy with the bluest eyes. I don't know, something. Not the best thing to say, but it will go to somebody else. And by the time the opportunities got to me, were those leftover opportunities. So, for example, at the end of the meeting where you don't get an opportunity to say anything, they'll ask you to type it up. Okay?
Yeah.
And type up the notes because you didn't say anything. And so those were the opportunities that was left. So then I said, well, forget about these five buckets. Let's make a sixth bucket. And that would be my opportunities, because I'm going to make them. So I started getting outside of my own shell, going to other people, trying to find these different opportunities and making something good out of them. And then the bucket started to fill up, so I couldn't take all of those opportunities. So when I see somebody else, another woman or another underrepresented person from another underrepresented group, I'm like, hey, here's an opportunity. Do you want it or not? And so I think that might be a way for us to work within the system, but also at the same time bring each other up. And I think that's one of the things that the Minerva Mentoring Award is actually exemplifies the people who actually do that.
Absolutely. Yes. And we were really excited to give you that award 2 years ago. And you definitely, your name is added to some amazing women in our province that have definitely brought each other up. That's for sure.
Yeah. Thank you. And I was going to just finish up by saying that for that time that I was asked to write up, or like, you know, type up the minutes for the reports, I actually went back and added all the stuff I wanted to say as well.
Awesome.
So just sort of sometimes the opportunities, even if they're not, don't look like opportunities, you can sort of use them.
Absolutely. Now, this leads us into your exciting new role as the Prairie Chair. So maybe you can explain to everyone first what this is, in case they don't know what NSERC is or what this position is. And then maybe we can get into what you hope to do. Because is it a five-year term?
It is a five-year term, yes.
Yeah.
And hopefully renewable. It is renewable for another 5 years. So.
Okay.
So the NSERC is the Council of Canada for doing research in science and engineering, and it funds basically most of the university professors and who want to work with industry on their own on programs with using many different programs. In the late 1980s, NSERC started this new program called Women in Science and Engineering Chair. And currently there are five chairs for five regions of Canada. So BC and Yukon are one region. Prairies, which is Alberta, Saskatchewan, and Manitoba are another region. Then there's Ontario, Quebec, and Atlantic Canada. So these are the five regions, and each region is represented by a chair. And the first Alberta, the Prairie Region Chair, was Dr. Elizabeth Cannon, who then became the department head and the dean of engineering. And then she's now she was the president emerita of the University of Calgary. So when I actually understood that this position, which was held by Annemieke Fahrenhorst, Professor Annemieke Fahrenhorst from University of Manitoba, was becoming available, I sort of thought that I should apply because I had some ideas of what things I wanted to do. At the same time, I was at a really good point in my career as a professor. I had three different research programs. I was supervising over 10 students and lots of other service and visibility in the research community. But I thought if there's one chance to do this, this is it. So let's do it. Then I started to think about what have I done and what have others done and what were the results of it. And I looked at all the activities in the WISE program and also the increase in the numbers of the and percentages of women and other underrepresented groups in science. And unfortunately, we can see that even though we have made progress, our progress has sort of been going really slowly. Mm-hmm. And if we want to make good progress, we need to actually be able to ramp this up. So then I thought, why do we want to do this? And why is this the progress so slow? Mm-hmm. And one of the things I realized is that the problems we are having are very systemic problems. So I don't know if you have seen this graphic where it's showing that equity versus equality. So there.
Yes, we know this one well.
So there are three people. One is a tall person, one's shorter, and one is in a wheelchair trying to see over a fence a soccer game. Mm-hmm. And each one is given a box. The person in the wheelchair cannot use the box. The person, short person, can barely see, and the tall person uses the box and can see much, much better. And then that's when the equality happens. When the equity happens, is that you will say that, okay, we make a ramp for the person with the wheelchair. We will have a box, two boxes for the shorter person, and then the tall person can just watch over the fence. And then when you take out the systemic barriers, you actually take out the fence or give these people some tickets to go sit down. So I said, well, if we can take out the systemic barriers give tickets to these people to just go sit in the stands and be safe and everything else. But why aren't we actually talking about these people playing in the game?
Totally.
Why should we always, as women, people are underrepresented groups, be always the spectators of
on the sidelines, right?
The sidelines, yes. Mm-hmm. So why can't we actually even make new games? Mm-hmm. Make the games that will be able to bring more joy, you know? So that became the basis of my idea that, okay, we need to actually change the game. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We need to bringing women, we're not going to set them go in the stands or do you get one box or two boxes to look from the sidelines. Mm-hmm. So then from there, the question was, how can we make this change happen? And the problem with change, and especially change, such a systemic change, such a big change, is that change is hard. And people mm-hmm. who have the privilege will usually say that losing the privilege is equal to taking away something from them. Yeah. So they will resist the change more. Basically, what you will hear a lot is, we have always done it this way. Mm-hmm. And So the question was that change is hard. How do we make change happen? And then I realized that actually we don't really need to change much, because change is coming. And this change is going to be the climate crisis, which is coming and is going to change our environment. It is the digital revolution, which is going to change our work and how we do things. And it is going to be biotechnology, which is going to change our bodies and our minds. And so these all three changes are coming within the next 10 years. So the question is not, how do we make change happen? The question is, how do we actually, what happens after the change? So think about the same stadium and the same people watching the game. And then they look back and they see a hurricane is coming. And that's the climate crisis. And this hurricane is going to destroy everything. So once everything is destroyed, are we going to build this massive giant structure with lots of security and retina scanners or whatever to only allow a select few to go in? And nobody, regardless of how many boxes you have, you will never be able to look at the game. Or are we going to make the field such that everybody can play in it? Mm-hmm. And everybody has a role in it. We want the second one. We want the field that everybody can be played with it. But to do that, we need many, many young, talented women who know how to envision that future that is diverse, equitable, inclusive, and just. And they can strategize to get there. They can implement those strategies. They can design for disruptions. They can creatively collaborate with each other. And then they can scale up all of their efforts. So imagine of that bioengineering work I told you with the Schulich School of Engineering. Imagine a new way of teaching all of our high school students. So instead of teaching them physics with war, we can teach them with all these different ways of that engineers use the math and science, how much more interesting the classes will be. And then also having students who are interested in art coming into engineering or collaborating with engineering and understanding each other's ideas. So my program is designed to basically do this. So it's made of three parts. The first part is to make a change leadership program, which is designed to bring in, to teach the fellows in the program how to envision, strategize, design for disruptive technologies, and so on. The second part is an experiential learning part, where everybody comes in with their own project. And during the time they are in, with collaborations with their mentors and other peers, they will scale up or pivot their project or measure its impact and so on. And then the third part is a network of wise leaders, women in science and engineering leaders, of male allies, and also other organizations that can help us, such as the business leaders, the people who make policy, and people in communication, and so on.
Wow, that's really exciting.
Mm-hmm, that's incredible.
Thank you.
And I don't think you've started yet. I think COVID kind of caused a bit of a delay, correct?
Absolutely, yes. So I'm hoping to start sending the applications, like getting the applications ready and starting getting the first cohort in November, and then start the program in January 2021. Because of COVID, everything had to go online, which takes a lot longer.
Oh, for sure. So hopefully you have a large STEM community and beyond listening to this podcast. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah.
But if you do have all of us to listen, what kind of call out do you have to all of us in the STEM community and beyond? How can we help in your efforts?
Yeah, thank you so much for saying that. So I know that many of us know a very talented young female. And I would really encourage the organizations, the companies, the people who are mentoring to think about if they can nominate this early career woman or other or person from other underrepresented groups to participate in the program. And I will be happy to share more information about it in a few weeks on how to apply and so on.
Awesome. And then as for the companies, is it just engineers or do you want scientists in general?
Oh, absolutely. Scientists too. Yes, of course. Yes, okay. Yes. So it could be scientists or engineers. The only thing is I'm asking the companies or the organizations to sponsor the program instead of sending a single person. And this way I am able to offer this to people from organizations that that don't have as much resources available to them. But the other really big part of this is that the organizations buying into the program can also mean that they have an invested interest in the program to become part of the network and hopefully champion other people from the network as well. And so it will make the program a lot more accessible, but it will also make these young fellows who are going to be part of the program connected to a much better and larger network. And so I don't know if you remember at the beginning, I said I didn't get here on my own. There were so many people who pushed me up. And so this is what I want the network to do, is to push these the fellows up and make them make sure that they become successful.
Absolutely. Like, it shouldn't just be on these young people to make the change, right? So,
correct.
You know, we're teaching them how they can make change, but it's definitely not up to them. It's up to all of us to break down the systemic barriers, correct?
Oh, absolutely. And that's why if the company is sponsoring the person coming in and they give them the project to work on, then they have a vested interest. But as part of the program, the fellows will also have to meet with key people in their organization, which will give them more support and visibility. So the company will actually, is not something that the fellows are doing on their own time and they have to figure out how to do it. It is for the company, and therefore the company is going to be invested in this initiative.
That's great.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for your time today. And I know personally, I'm pretty excited to follow this over the next 5 years or 10, possibly.
And I'm very excited to have you involved with it, if possible.
Hopefully. I'm hoping somehow to help out along the way, which is exciting for me too.
I just wanted to add one more thing then,
sure,
if that's okay. I would say that don't be afraid to imagine. And so imagine a world that is equitable, diverse, and inclusive. So if we can't imagine it, if we can't envision it, we won't be able to build it. I'm giving everyone permission to imagine such a world. and that you have all the opportunities you can have. And then the second one is that this is a quote from Grace Hopper, Admiral Grace Hopper, which is one of my personal heroes. And one thing she said is that the most damaging phrase in the world is, we have always done it this way.
Yes.
So if anybody tells you that, just send them this quote from Admiral Grace Hopper.
Absolutely.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. So I kind of jotted down a few key takeaways. We like to do some takeaways for our listeners. And some of the things that popped out for me is that when it comes to STEM and in society and getting people interested in STEM, that there's different strategies that we can use. And maybe we have to get away from what is normal or what is, you know, what it used to be. And I love that the UFC and other groups are taking something like physics and moving it towards different concepts of learning, that we don't have to just learn it one way. And that might actually increase those who are interested in the subject when they see that physics is everywhere. It's crazy to think that we'd only ever taught it one way, right? Or minimal ways, when everything is physics. And yes, I like physics. So
I like physics too.
Yeah. And secondly, that when it comes to STEM, that support is important, that is important that we work together and that we lift each other up, and that it's not up to one individual to make change, but we have to work together and find root problems along the way and to support and promote each other and so make solutions together. In so many ways, the game is changing. It's not what it was or what we even think it is right now. We need to make systemic change. And even though change is hard, it is coming regardless if we want it to come or not, whether that be within our climate crisis, within how we work or where we work, or even within our own bodies. And so to be part of it and to learn along the way. And finally, that there is a call out to our greater STEM community here in, and is it just in Alberta?
No, Alberta, Saskatchewan, Manitoba.
Oh, great.
The whole prairie region.
Fantastic.
Awesome. So there we go. Call out across the prairie region for potential fellows to take part in this exciting change concept within STEM. So this is really cool.
So they can lead the change and be the people who make the future.
Absolutely. And let's remind ourselves that this can be anywhere from agriculture to resource to energy to, you know, STEM. STEM goes across many, many different facets of our
medicine
community.
Even.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today. This has been incredible to learn about your journey around the world and what you're doing now and how much change you're impacting. So it's incredible. And on that note, to our listeners, don't forget to check the resource section of the podcast to find the references for this episode. And once again, you can find our podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, and Buzzsprout. And please hit subscribe to be notified when a new episode is released.
And let's continue the conversation. Let us know what you think. Send us questions on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. We would love to hear from you. And also, don't forget to check out the WinSTEM Week calendar next week here in Alberta. There's actually going to be events throughout the week if you're interested in learning more about STEM. So until next time, bye.
Yeah, bye. Thank you for joining our episode one of season two.
Yes.
Episode one.
Yay.
And thank you very much.